translation. In this way, Subari Muni enjoyed sense gratification in the material world, but he was not at all satisfied, just as a fire never ceases blazing if constantly supplied with drops of fat. Please repeat. In this way, Subari Muni enjoyed sense gratification in the material world, but he was not at all satisfied, just as a fire never ceases blazing if constantly supplied with drops of fat. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Material desire is just like a blazing fire. If a fire is constantly supplied with drops of fat, the fire will increase more and more and never be extinguished. Therefore, the policy of trying to satisfy material desires by catering to one's material demands will never be successful. In modern civilization, everyone is engaged in economic development, which is another way of constantly dropping fat into the material fire. The Western countries have reached the summit of material civilization, but people are still dissatisfied. Real satisfaction is Krishna consciousness. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 5:29, where Krishna says, Bhoktaram yagna tapashan, sarva loka maheshvaram, suridam sarvabhutanam, gnatva mam shantam richchati. The sages, knowing me as the ultimate purpose of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attain peace from the pangs of material miseries. One must therefore take to Krishna consciousness and advance in Krishna consciousness by properly following the regulative principles. Then one can attain an eternal, blissful life in peace and knowledge. Verse again. Evam grihesh vabirato vishayan vivadai shukai sevamano nachatushad achyasokari ivanalaha. In this way, Subari Muni enjoyed sense gratification in the material world, but he was not at all satisfied, just as a fire never ceases blazing if constantly supplied with drops of fat. So we're reading here the continuation of the story of Subari Muni, who, although he was a great Muni, became distracted simply by seeing fish engaged in sexual activity. And he thought he was protecting himself by being away from distractions, so he thought. Anyway, in the course of the story, yesterday we heard a lot of the details of the story, so I won't recount every detail, but what's in the verse today is that Subari Muni now has married 50 wives. One would expect that with sense gratification that there would be satisfaction, but what in fact is happening is that he's not satisfied. And the example is of a fire being doused with fat, or you could say oil. That's fat. It's something. Fat is something that will burn very, very easily. And so, like when we see fire sacrifices, we often have fire sacrifices in the pursuit of Krishna consciousness. Just recently, we had the installation of Krishna Balaram. We had many fires burning at the same time, and the priest was pouring ghee into the fire. And you can see every time you put a spoonful of ghee, the fire would blaze up. And this is the example that's given when we engage our senses in sense gratification, that it just is basically agitating. So there's no question of satisfaction when there's agitation. So that example of throwing fat, as the verse is saying, into the fire is what happens when we try to enjoy our senses. And of course, what's behind it is that if we forget Krishna and that he is the the ultimate enjoyer. He is the first enjoyer. If we don't offer enjoyment to him, like, it's not like we can't enjoy in the material world. Every day we're eating prasadam. It's very enjoyable to eat prasadam. Does anybody disagree with that? Does anybody not like prasadam? It's very enjoyable, but it's offered to Krishna. And even the process of eating, we see it as service. And then they say the ultimate sense gratification in the material world is sex life. This is what he was engaging in. And he wasn't satisfied. And I've actually seen it with other so-called spiritual groups. There was one in particular that was located on the West Coast, that the idea that guru was promoting was enjoy sex life. Just have as much sex life as you want. And the idea that he had was that eventually you would satisfy that desire and then you would lead a pure life with no sex life. And it didn't work. It totally didn't work. I mean, the guru himself had like a harem of women, and it was a crazy idea. So we're very thankful that Srila Prabhupada has given us a very clear program. And although there may be angles to look at as far as the instruction of no illicit sex, it's one of the four regular principles. We make it the promise when we get initiated, we're going to follow that. And strictly speaking, it's sex for procreation. That's it. It's a totally devotional activity, because when we offer the highest sense gratification to Krishna for the purpose of creating a Krishna conscious child, then Krishna is accepting that as service. There's many varieties of how people see that instruction. This is, what Prabhupada said. And then I've heard that there are times when Prabhupada also said, at least keep the sex within the marriage, not to go outside. So, just like in any instruction, there's levels of following. And wherever we're at, I'm not trying to make people feel guilty. It's more like there's a standard, and we should know what that standard is and then attain it. Try to, go steps in that direction to eventually attain it. If we're not following, then it's all doable. So anyway, to look at the points that Prabhupada is saying in the purport, he is comparing material desire to a blazing fire. And again, in the verse itself, that visual idea of pouring ghee or oil, fat on the fire, it's going to blaze. And he's saying that by pouring drops of fat, the fire will increase more and more. And he says it will never be extinguished. So therefore, he's saying the policy is of trying to satisfy material desires by catering to those demands, it'll never be successful. So he's taking that example, and then he's applying it to material civilization. Of course, you might have heard the quote that somebody asked Gandhi, what do you think of Western civilization? And he said, I think it would be a good idea. I'm not sure if I'm quoting it directly. So we can understand that Western civilization is not civilized. And Prabhupada's saying here, in the modern world, we're engaged in economic development, which is another way, he's saying, of constantly dropping fat in the material fire. So we obviously have to engage in material development, especially as grihasthas. We can't ignore the fact that we have to support ourselves in the material world, and that takes some work, so that the current exchange is not barter anymore. It's something called money. It doesn't come by not working. So, or maybe it can, I guess, but it still has to be managed. So we have to put some, if we're grihasthas anyway, we have to put our mind to some extent to economic development. It just shouldn't be like our end all and be all, like that's the priority in our life. Prabhupada is constantly encouraging us to engage in Krishna consciousness. This is his message, Chant Hare Krishna, and serve Krishna. This is our position. So Srila Prabhupada is saying that the Western countries have reached the summit of material civilization. So Prabhupada wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 9 probably in, 1976 or so? So that's, how many years ago is that? That's like 35 years ago or so? 34 years? And it was so true then, and it's even more true now, that we think we have reached the summit of material civilization. And then he's saying, but people are still dissatisfied. And I would say that people are even more dissatisfied than they were 35 years ago. The more advancement, it seems like, the more dissatisfaction. It's just, there's just no way around it. It's amazing how if you go to, the medium that people are dealing with is online. So if we go to any online news, we're going to find that, they're always glorifying all the so-called advancements and how the world has become very small because we can communicate with people all over so easily. I mean, it has its advantages if we use it in Krishna consciousness, but mostly of the, millions of websites or billions probably, and the numbers of people who are using the internet, it's not for Krishna consciousness. It's in the world of economic development and in the material world. So it's, Prabhupada is very clearly saying it's not going to bring satisfaction, even though we're meant to think like that. We're meant to think that advancement brings us satisfaction and happiness. Prabhupada is saying real satisfaction is Krishna consciousness. It's confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. It's confirmed in all the scriptures. The Prabhupada is quoting a very well-known verse, Bhoktaram Yagna Tapasham, where very clearly said that the Supreme Lord is the ultimate purpose of all sacrifices and austerities. The sages know this very clearly. And, Krishna, is the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities. So by knowing Krishna, we can attain peace from the pangs of material miseries. So Prabhupada's conclusion is, therefore, one must take to Krishna consciousness and advance in Krishna consciousness by properly following the regular principles. Then one can attain an eternal blissful life in peace and knowledge. So it's so wonderful how Prabhupada, in just really every verse, he's encouraging us to take up Krishna consciousness. And what's the reward? Eternal blissful life. So if anybody has any doubt that Prabhupada is capable of taking us back to Godhead, where we can reach our, eternal, our home, really, back to home, back to Godhead, this is not our home. We may think, we want to carve our little nest here or whatever. It's temporary. It's not our real home. I mean, we all know this, but it's good to remind ourselves that there is another realm. And Srila Prabhupada, since his appearance day is coming up, I just want to say as much as I can to glorify him. He is the one person we can trust, the guru we can trust, who we can be sure that he can take us back to Godhead. And of course, if his followers, it applies to them too, because if we're following Srila Prabhupada, then we're being connected to him. We have his potency, coming through us. That's the idea of a transparent via media. Prabhupada is a transparent via media to his guru. His guru is connected to his guru, and we're connected to the whole succession in that way. So if we ourselves become true followers of Prabhupada by repeating what he said without adding, without subtracting, without interpreting, then we get his power, his potency through us. When I first read this verse, what really stood out to me was the idea of the blazing fire, because every day we're chanting what we call the samsara prayers, Guru Vastika. And that verse is also talking about a blazing fire. So in researching what Prabhupada said about that blazing fire, I came across a lecture Prabhupada gave in 1969 in Los Angeles. And it was a lecture on the first verse of Guru Vastika, Samsara Dava Nala Vita Loka. Chanayakar na ganaganat from Praptasya Kalyana Ganan Vasya Pande Guroshi Charna Arvinda. Prabhupada, this first he's talking about the meaning of the verse, but he goes into more things. He says, this material existence is just like forest blazing fire. There's no use of sending the fire brigade to extinguish a blazing forest fire. The fire brigade cannot even approach the forest fire. Neither can any man go there to extinguish the fire. One has to completely depend on the mercy of nature. That means one has complete dependence on the clouds in the sky. Otherwise, there is no question of pouring water on that blazing fire. So, the example is very appropriate. A man-made engine or a fire brigade is unable to extinguish the forest blazing fire. Similarly, the material existential blazing fire cannot be extinguished by any man-made method. They are planning to be very comfortable in this material existence, but they fail, and still are becoming more confused. That peace movement, the United Nations movement, everything is a failure. Why? These miseries of this material existence cannot be stopped by any material means. One has to take shelter of spiritual means. Just like the blazing fire in the forest has to wait for the clouds in the sky, similarly, one has to wait for the merciful cloud of the spiritual master. That is described, Janaya Karina Ganaganatvam, Praptasya Kalina Ganaranavasya. So, the spiritual master is not self-made. It is not that if anyone comes before you and bluffs you, that I have attained spiritual perfection, and I have realized something by some method. No, the bona fide spiritual master means that he has received the power from authority. Otherwise, it is useless. It is not that one can become a spiritual master overnight. He has to take power from his spiritual master. Therefore, it is called praptasya. Praptasya means one who has obtained, one who has got the merciful blessings of his spiritual master. So this is a very important point, like getting the blessings of the spiritual master. And Prabhupada is saying that to become a spiritual master is not, you can't just, you know, rubber stamp, okay, now I'm a spiritual master, listen to me. He's saying that a spiritual master has to be connected to the power of his spiritual master. Like the line is continued by one, the disciple becoming the true follower, the true, he's connected to the power of his spiritual master, and he's able to fully represent that guru. And that's the way the disciple succession goes on. So Prabhupada then starts talking about that in this lecture. We should always remember that the spiritual master is in the disciple succession. The original spiritual master is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He blesses his next disciple, just like Brahma. Brahma blesses his next disciple, just like Narada. Narada blesses his next disciple, just like Vyas. Vyas blesses his next disciple, Madhvacharya. Similarly, the blessing is coming. Just like royal succession, the throne is inherited by disciplic or hereditary succession. Similarly, this power from the Supreme Personality of Godhead has to be received. Nobody can preach, or nobody can become a spiritual master without obtaining power from the right source. Therefore, the very word, it is stated here, praptasya. Praptasya means one who has obtained. Praptasya kalyana. What has he obtained? Kalyana. Kalyana means auspiciousness. He has received something which is auspicious for all the humankind. Praptasya kalina gunarnavasya. Here is another example. Gunarnava. Arnava means ocean and guna means spiritual qualities. The same example applies. It is very nice poetry. there is nice rhetorics and metaphor. The example, blazing fire, is set, and it is to be extinguished by the clouds. And wherefrom does the cloud come? Similarly, wherefrom does the spiritual master receive the mercy? The clouds receive their potency from the ocean. Therefore, the spiritual master also receives his power from the ocean of spiritual quality, that is, from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, praptasya kalyana gunara navasya, such kind of spiritual master one has to accept, and vande guru sri charanarvindam, one has to offer his respectful obeisances to such an authorized spiritual master. So doesn't this completely apply to Srila Prabhupada? He is the authorized spiritual master. I know when I first became a devotee, the authority of what Prabhupada was saying was so clear to me. I mean, it was so easy to understand how people have so many philosophies, and growing up, you hear so many different philosophies. You hear from your parents, you hear from your teachers, your friends, books you read. So many influences are there, and it's confusing. Like, who knows what they're talking about? It seemed like nobody knew for sure, but they certainly were presenting their ideas as if they were authority. But when I came to the temple and started reading Bhagavad Gita, that was I read Easy Journey to Other Planets. It was the first book of Prabhupada's that I read. And it was written really for scientists. And it was very interesting. It was like a proof that there is, he was calling it anti-material. He wasn't saying spiritual, but he was giving a proof of anti-material as opposed to material. But then when I read Bhagavad Gita, that book was so appropriate I reread it several times. And I must admit, it was the abridged edition. That was what was available when I joined. So it wasn't as long as, the full edition. But I read it again and again. Each time I read it, it was like the words were meant for me to hear at that moment. And they also seemed fresh and new, like I hadn't read it before. Even though I was rereading, each time it was like, this is what I need to hear. And it was like a living scripture. It wasn't stagnant at all. And it was just so authoritative. It was so clear that Prabhupada was not making anything up. We could trust him, that he is simply repeating his spiritual master and the disciplic succession. And you could, in that trust, you could fully give your life. It was like sometimes I've heard of people doing the exercise where you fall backwards into someone's hands, and it's an exercise to learn trust. And that was that kind of full just letting go, and yes, I can trust Prabhupada. He's not going to cheat me, and he's not going to take advantage of me. I mean, I came to the movement feeling kind of raw, being taken advantage of in so many ways. And it was amazing to be able to, I didn't even meet Srila Prabhupada, just meeting his disciples and reading his books and following his instructions to chant Hare Krishna and go on Sankirtan and, just engage in the morning program and all that, that I felt actually fully connected to Prabhupada. Although I didn't realize that I was fully connected to him till I met him, because I was actually, okay, to tell you the truth, when I read Bhagavad Gita, I thought, how could the person who wrote this book be on this planet? Like, this was like, beyond this world. The person who wrote this was so elevated. And yet, I was in a temple. I joined in Boston in early 1971, like New Year's Day of 1971, and there was practically everybody in the temple had met Prabhupada. And they were telling me stories about him. Yet, because I was, just had deep doubts, I still was wondering, is this person really on the planet? Will I ever meet him? Like, all those kind of doubts, until the day that I went to the New York temple. It was July of, 1971, and Prabhupada arrived, and we're all sitting in the temple room, The night, it was actually Prabhupada was giving initiations in the morning, so he would give a class at night, a Bhagavad Gita class at night. And I was living in Washington Temple. We drove there. I was supposed to get initiated the next day, so we strung our beads in the prasadam room, and there wasn't beads coming in from India, so we had walnut beads, you know, counted out 108 from a box. Somebody bought a, you know, big box of walnut beads. We strung them up, and then we all go into the temple room and waiting to see Srila Prabhupada. Maybe I've told this story before, but it was so crowded that not everybody could fit in. So one of our godbrothers was going around tapping people on the shoulder saying, can you leave so that other people who haven't seen Srila Prabhupada can come in? And he tapped on my shoulder, and it's like, I'm not going to leave. I had lived in the New York temple. Maybe he thought I still lived there. Maybe he hadn't noticed I had been gone for 3 months at other temples, you know. But it was like, maybe it started my career of, you know, not being very submissive. But I wasn't going to leave, you know, because I wanted to see Srila Prabhupada. And it took, seemed forever, you know, waiting. And we're just looking at the door. And finally, the door opened. And Srila Prabhupada walked in. And it was the most unexpected feeling. It was like seeing an old friend who I hadn't seen in a long, long time. And I so didn't expect that. Like I said, I had all these doubts and questioning, and then seeing Srila Prabhupada was like, I guess I realized that all the time that I had been worshiping Prabhupada's picture and serving him, it really was Srila Prabhupada. It kind of all came together. And so, as I said, I realized I did know him by service. And I also want to share that I think recently someone was mentioning how Saraswati, Malati and Shamasundar's little girl, was preaching to someone, and she just said, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. Were you telling that story, Mahatma? Somebody was telling recently how. Actually, it was a Pandal program in Bombay, and there was thousands of people there. Radhanaswami, who was just, you know, a guest of, you know, coming to check out what was going on there, he was way at the back. And, you know, thousands of people, Saraswati went right over to him and said to him, do you know who Krishna is? And he said, no. And she said, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So somehow Prabhupada came to know of this, and he said, that is perfect preaching. So someone told me this when I was a new devotee, and it really gave me strength that whatever I knew, that I could share that with other people. And it was actually a brilliant idea the Prabhupada had, that not that you have to become totally fixed up in Krishna consciousness and then you can go out and preach, but that anybody who knew just that much that Krishna is God, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know that much, you can go out and preach, and it's perfect. So it really gave me strength, and because I was always, especially the early days, what did I know? I didn't know much, but I knew that much. I knew that Krishna was God. And so, you know, how does this apply to us? I really feel that I'm really speaking to myself, but we need to be fearless in preaching. Like when we meet people to share Krishna consciousness, people are suffering so much. Just like in this verse, I mean, people are trying to enjoy their senses. They think that the purpose of life is to enjoy, and they're suffering. They're not getting the result. And we really have the solution. I mean, not that we're going to solve all problems. That's not going to happen. It just, we have a way of becoming transcendental to the material modes of nature, and we can actually go back to Godhead. So this is very valuable information. This is, the process is joyful. It's not like it's some great austerity, chanting Hare Krishna, dancing, singing, eating prasadam, and this is the whole program. There's nothing more than that. I mean, there's reading, okay, you could say there's hard work if you want to look at service as hard work. It could be hard or it could be easy, whatever way you want to look at it. But basically, we have a joyful process, and We know we want to give it to others, and I just feel like it's up to us to figure out ways to accomplish that. I mean, it can start on a simple level, like I'm saying, like whoever we meet, we can share Krishna consciousness. We can carry mantra cards. There's some very nice cards that the temple authorities made up. It's like a bookmarker. Does everybody know about that? It's a mantra card. It's an invitation. It's, it has a colorful picture. And they're usually available in the back of the temple. If they're not, let me know, or let the temple authorities know, because they're available for us to give out to people, invite them to come to the temple. But we can also be, a lot of devotees that I know carry small books, so when you meet people, you can give them a book. But even if you don't have any paraphernalia, we're meeting people, we can talk to them, we can invite them, we can even just say, I'm a devotee of Krishna and I love it. You know, whatever we want to say that, you know, will convey we're giving some degree of Krishna consciousness. And it's not that, I don't feel we have to convince them to leave their life and shave up and you know, surrender everything and become a devotee. They can take steps towards Krishna, and that's fine. I think in the old days, it was pretty clear. It's like, you're either in the temple and you're a devotee, or you're in Maya, you know. That was the paradigm back then. It's not like that anymore. And it's much more healthy and organic. We're living out there in the material world. We're living amongst non-devotees. We're working amongst non-devotees, and that's fine. And we can give Krishna consciousness. We can be who we are. We don't have to hide it. You know, if there's some embarrassment about that, then, you know, let's talk about it. Let's clear that up. Because sometimes I've heard devotees say, well, I want to invite them to the temple, but then there's this problem or that problem. I don't want them to come and see that. And, well, you know, that's why we hear announcements from Mukhya about improving the Sunday feast, which is our main focus when we invite people. That's a very good time to invite them. And if there's something that's you don't see that's wonderful about the Sunday feast, then let's clear that up. Let's, you know, do something about it so that it becomes a wonderful experience for them. In the past, I was very enthusiastic to, I created a program called the Love Thy Neighbor Festival, and it basically was an open house that was, you know, geared towards guests. So they didn't feel intimidated. They weren't outnumbered. And I know I've heard that myself from guests, like they feel like it's all devotees, and they'd feel out of place, and they'd be the only one who's not a devotee, so they'd feel uncomfortable. So either we make our Sunday feast where they feel comfortable, or we could do more programs like the Love Thy Neighbor Festival. I think that's a program that has been successful in other parts of the world. I know at the Manor they do it on a monthly basis, and they even have developed it to such a point they have a theme. And you know, I say this every time I give class, I think that we're a very intelligent bunch of people who are practicing Krishna consciousness, we're committed to the process, and so I really feel like we can figure this out. We can figure out ways, innovative ways, of engaging non-devotees in Krishna consciousness in a way that they're comfortable with, in a way that they're happy to participate, and give them a chance to take up the process and make it available to them. And, you know, some of them will take it. I mean, I'm convinced there are people out there waiting to hear from us. You know, they're just waiting to meet us, just like we were. You know, there's still people out there, and there always will be. There's new generations. There's people. I mean, it's amazing. Sometimes you meet people, and they never even heard of Krishna consciousness. Like, you wonder, how could that be? How did it go from, you know, Hare Krishna was a household word. Prabhupada himself said that. And now we meet people who have never heard it. So we have to look at ourselves as the ones who can, again, bring back Krishna consciousness and put it in the forefront of people's view. There's one department that I feel that this temple could use, and maybe you'll all agree that it's missing. I guess we call it communications nowadays. We used to call it PR, public relations. Now they call it communications. Rasalila and I have advertised Janmashtami. We put out advertisements for the installation and that celebration. I don't mind doing it. I like doing it with her. And each time we do that, I realize there really should be a committee, a group of devotees who are committed to bringing our awareness to our surrounding community about our festivals and advertising Krishna consciousness in every realm. And we're just doing the basics. We're just doing newspapers, the radio stations that have free announcements for community events. But there's the whole world of television. We have reached out to them a little bit. I can't say we have totally ignored advertising on television, but it's a difficult field because it needs some training. And I think there's people in this community who are trained to have that kind of, you know, to invite the TV station to come here and be that person to take them around and so on. We can do that. We just haven't developed it. And suggesting that we form a committee that's going to take that on so that we can, why not use the media? I mean, we're using the internet already. But television is something that's, I myself feel intimidated by it. I know Anutima, who's in charge of ISKCON Communications, has done some training sessions on, you know, and I've even taken it and still I don't feel totally comfortable. But, you know, he has very good training. His point is just make 3 points. You come to an interview on television with 3 points. I mean, one thing is having them coming to a festival, but another thing is, like, you know, getting on TV to be interviewed. So he was saying, no matter what questions they ask you, you're simply making the 3 points that you want to make. And you just don't get diverted from that. And, you know, you just keep it simple. You make those 3 points, and the interview will go great. So I'm just going to wind up here. Again, the verse is, in this way, Sabari Muni enjoyed sense gratification in the material world, but he was not at all satisfied, just as a fire never ceases blazing if constantly supplied with drops of fat. So are there any questions, comments? No, you have to decide what they are. If you're going to go on television, maybe you want to make it, you're not this body, Krishna is God. I mean, I don't know, but, you know, what would you think? If you had 3 points to make on television, what would they be? Okay. Okay. Anybody else have 3 points that they would say? Madhavati? We don't have a mic. Is there a mic today? Okay. Sorry. Yeah.
Saying that Ramnath Maharaj, when he did his interview, as far as I remember, two of the points that Prabhu was mentioning, one was compassionate towards other living entities and chanting the holy name that will bring out that compassion. You know? Mm-hmm. So it was very, I don't know, did you hear that?
Yeah, I saw it. The one in Seattle? Recently it's online, yeah.
Yeah, so two of the points were those. I'm sure we can get the third point out of there. But
yeah. But I was asking Sasha because you asked the question. What would your 3 points be? You agree? You agree with Mahabodhi? Okay. Sure, comfortable.
So, very interesting. You were talking earlier about the guru, and you said that if one follows the guru nicely, then he can also preach. A lot of people feel that Srila Prabhupada is the end of the guru line or lineage. And it is disturbing for a lot of us, really. And
yeah.
Especially they're still around and still propagating this, and it's, you know, and it's not so pleasant to hear them, really. What's your view on this? And what's your
My view is that devotees should be respected and honored. And so the natural conclusion of that idea, that the cyclic succession ends with Prabhupada, is discounting all the people, all the devotees, who have taken on the service of being guru. I mean, it's like, it's so and to me that's distressful. Because my understanding of developing love of God means that we develop love for other living entities too, especially devotees, and especially elevated devotees who've taken on such a hard service. I mean, I would never agree to take on that service. Of course, I'm not qualified, so no question, you know, but I'm just saying, like, even, you know, to look at it, like, whoa, that's taking on responsibility for somebody else's spiritual life. That's in, you know, and they're doing it on behalf of Prabhupada. Like, every initiation I've ever been to, because sometimes I've gone to initiations, like, with a little bit of a chip on my shoulder, like, challenging, like, are you really qualified, and who do you think you are, kind of thing. And every time I felt satisfied, because they would say, I am initiating you on behalf of Prabhupada. It's there. I've been waiting for the GBC to come up with a clear description of Prabhupada's position. Like, they've been promising they're going to do that for years, actually. And really making it clear what Prabhupada's position as founder Acharya of ISKCON is. And when that's clear, I'm hoping that it'll also be clear that his disciples who have taken up the service of Guru, what their position is. Anyway, that's my take. Is that okay? Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the understanding, that's the meaning of disciplic succession. It's disciple becomes the guru, then he, you know, his disciple becomes, you know, that's the whole meaning of disciplic succession. So I guess I need to call on Krishna Bhakta. I don't know.
I'd like to explain a couple of things to you devotees, if you don't mind. In regards to Guru Parampara, I think it's very important to understand the first thing, that Prabhupada is the current Acharya in this movement, you know. And he has imparted his disciples to act in his behalf, even initiate devotees in his behalf. And but we know what that's called. We know what that term for that is, Ritvik. Prabhupada authorized disciples to accept disciples on his behalf. And in his July 9th letter, he stated very clearly that those disciples were his disciples. So I think there's a little confusion in this regard. Our disciplic succession doesn't end with Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada is the head of our disciplic succession. Just like Lord Brahma, he's been the guru in our disciplic succession for the last how many millions of years? He's the current Acharya. Prabhupada is the current Acharya within our society. And our disciplic succession is only lost when the knowledge is lost. Just like from the time of Lord Krishna till today, there's been periods when there's been no masters in our society. Like a river, it may run above ground at one point, it may run underground at some point, but the civic succession is there. It's a succession of knowledge. And as long as the knowledge remains intact, the succession is not lost. And Prabhupada's potency, I mean, I appreciate what you said about when you met Prabhupada, how you felt very connected to Prabhupada, and that's wonderful, but there are an equal amount of devotees they could say they never met Prabhupada and they felt as strongly connected, if not more so, through service through Vani. Mm-hmm. So that's our connection. Our connection is not a physical connection. Our connection is much deeper than that. Mm-hmm. And these devotees today, they may be great souls, etc. But as far as I'm concerned, they've only been authorized to initiate on Prabhupada's behalf. And that's our disciplic succession. It won't be broken. If the books are changed and the knowledge is lost, then the succession is lost. As long as the books remain intact, as long as the devotees act on behalf of Prabhupada, then the succession will continue. There's no question of it being lost. You know, it will be lost as you stated earlier, if someone doesn't follow the path and is not bona fide and rubber stamps themselves, gives themselves a title. And we've seen that happening again and again and again. And the result of that is loss of thousands of devotees, loss of faith. That's when people lose their contact with Krishna. But as long as as a society, if we connect people very strongly to Prabhupada and explain that he is the Acharya in this movement, that he is the current Acharya in this movement, I don't see why there would be any difficulty, any problem, why we can't move forward with this understanding in it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I could take comments, but I'll call on Ruchira. She's had her hand up.
I had something else to say, but I just wanted to comment on that point. One point is that, you know, Srila Prabhupada pointed out again and again, he was the founder of Acharya Viskan. But that doesn't mean that there aren't other gurus, just like when Lord Chaitanya was on the planet. It's not that everyone went to him to take Diksha, although he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead and everyone followed him. So, you know, to think that Prabhupada couldn't make qualified disciples that could initiate and help them through Prabhupada's mercy, obviously, always. You know, if they deviate from Prabhupada, that's wrong, but because he is the founder of Acharya. But to think that there's no qualified devotees besides Srila Prabhupada is demeaning Srila Prabhupada and himself, that he could not create disciples that were qualified. But the point I wanted to make was, I thought it was interesting in the purport, Srila Prabhupada said, the Western world has reached the summit, because a summit is the very top, and the only way to go after that is down. And I was thinking, you look at the world right now, and that's where it's going, is, you know, this sense gratification and consumerism just wasn't, and even then, Prabhupada was already predicting, you're at the summit, and it's only going down. But I found, and also the point of drops of fat, because in another place of in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada explains that drops of fat make a fire keep going, but pouring a whole bucket of fat on a fire will put it out. Yeah. So sometimes you see devotees joining after they've been so burnt out by trying to enjoy to the maximum. But this little bit of enjoyment, you know, here, that keeps that fire going. And I think sometimes myself, I have a tendency of doing that. And, you know, that can keep the fire blazing. You know, just trying to enjoy just a little kind of enjoyment in the mode of goodness sort of thing, you know, and that can keep that fire going. Whereas, you know, if we just stop putting the fat on altogether, the fire will go out.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks. Aditi, this will be the last question because we're way over time.
I just wanted to say, in response to that July 9th letter, it was very clear, Prabhupada, he was asked, while you are living, whose disciple are they? And he said, they are my disciple. And after you are gone, and then he said, they will be their disciple. So that was very clear. And then that the other point would be that in the same way, why would we have taken initiation from Prabhupada? The Acharya was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. So we would all become disciples of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta.
Okay, what can you let's
and
I just request for.
And the other point is that coming from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, there were other godbrothers of Prabhupada, and they are legitimate gurus also, and they have disciplic succession.
Right.
So we have had some difficulties because we try to worship these new gurus with our newfound understanding of how to worship a guru, and they weren't capable of that kind of worship. And but we can see that many are still there, and many are doing a great job.
Yeah.
So to discount them, I think, is immature.
Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada.